Swinging a high drive into center field. Hits at the wall. It is gone! Cassis does it again.
Again.
It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high. It's deep. It's back. It's gone! Sale winds. He fires. Swing and a miss. Strike three. It's over.
The Red Sox have won the World Championship.
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 142 if you're listening on drop day. It is October 21st. This is the official podcast of Killing Time Till the Stove Gets Hot, also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Before we get going, remember to hit that subscribe button wherever you're listening. Rate us 5 stars. Find us on YouTube on the WEEI page. We got a Play Tessie playlist there. Hit the thumbs up on the videos and find us on the socials at Play Tessie on both Twitter and Instagram. If you're watching on YouTube right now, you can see that there's three of us, but Pat's not here. But we do have a very special guest. He is the host of Pod by the River and To the Show We Go, both excellent podcasts. You should check them out if you haven't. It's Ed Hand on Twitter, at EdHand89. You might know him as the creator of the Red Sox personality bracket or the bullpen trust meter. This guy is all over the place on Twitter, on Red Sox Twitter, and we are freaking pumped to have Ed at hand here in the center box, nonetheless.
Is that, like, that's not usually, is that usually Pat's spot? And I'm just like, decided to replace him?
Usually I'm in the center, and it kind of goes back and forth because, like, I kind of direct traffic. But you're the guest, so you're getting the center box. That's pretty cool.
Just to play on my name, I actually do have a question for you guys. Because I think you're around the same age as me. You guys ever watched Ed, Ed, and Eddie growing up?
Yeah. I did.
Which one are each of you for Ed, Ed, and Eddie of the Play Tessie group?
Ooh.
I feel like we're all okay. So that's Eddie, nobody wants to be Eddie, right?
I want to be Eddie.
No, I actually like Eddie.
Yeah, this guy looks like this, right?
No, that's Ed.
That's Ed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. Right, let me think. I want to be the guy with the sock on his head.
So you're the nerd.
So you're the nerd.
Yeah. I like numbers. Nerd.
Okay. So I guess since I kind of direct traffic and host, I'll be Eddie. You could be Double D. But that means Pat's Ed. But Pat's not here to defend himself.
But so Pat's also the tallest and I think the physically strongest, so that checks out.
Fair. You know what? It's
like, I've seen Pat in person. He's jacked.
He is jacked.
Pat's yoked. How do you know?
How do you know that Ed... I know he's the tallest, but how do you know he's the physically strongest?
Because there's an episode where he gets like a pebble stuck in his shoe and he's so mad he just like beats the hell out of everybody around him. He's like doing like Superman feats. It's insane.
Like, he does
incredibly
look
high
like...
power level.
Do you ever, oh God, what was that book? It's a really famous book that I'm sure we all read like in high school or something where there was a guy who was like mentally disabled, but he has like superhuman strength.
Oh, Of Mice and Men, yeah.
Yes, that.
That's a classic.
The movie with John Malkovich and Gary Sinise, I can't watch that because I just bawl my eyes out too much.
It's heavy. It's very sad. Wait, Ed and Eddie comment. Do you guys remember the episode where they removed their outlines?
Yes, where they just break all the laws of physics. It's amazing.
Right. It's a big fourth wall breaker because they all have these kind of like chunky black outlines around their whole body. Every character has it. And there's one episode where they remove the outlines. They're like, where's my outline? I always thought that was great. That's my favorite ep.
I like the guy who carries around the plank. I don't know his
Johnny?
Name. Johnny. Yeah, he's got a really well-shaped head. Like he carries around a block of wood.
Dude, he's great. But the plank's name is Plank.
His name is Plank, and he's he may or may not actually be sentient.
Yes, there he is. Look at that head.
I love that. And then at the end, it's like, I'm Ed and Eddie.
Oh God! All right, Ed. Wait, is that why you asked?
My name's Ed. There are three of you. It seemed like a good like Rorschach test of where you each stand, you know, like where you see yourselves within the show.
Your name sounded really weird coming out of my mouth after that conversation.
Right?
Yeah. All right, Ed, we got to talk about your free agency rankings. We were talking before the show. You're not releasing them till the end of the World Series.
Nope. Doesn't come out until then. Too many variables.
Yeah, which is fair. But sneak peek.
Yeah.
Maybe, maybe give us a couple that are high up on that list that you think would fit the Boston Red Sox.
That would fit the Boston Red Sox. Okay. Well, they need – I would say that we're all in agreement. They need starting pitching, right?
Yes.
Yeah. No, they need starting pitching. So right now I have the number one guy is obviously Juan Soto, and I think he would fit anybody. I don't think that there's – I think it's fun to think about what would happen if Juan Soto came to Boston. I don't think that there is a realistic chance of that happening. That brings us to the next guy on the list. That's Corbin Burnes, the righty starter, workhorse. He's been really good. Another good year with the Orioles, who traded a bunch to get him. I was pretty confident they were going to extend him during the season, and it just never happened. So him hitting free agency, not my top pick for it. But
okay. So he's not your top pick for the Red Sox. He's just your top ranked pitcher.
Is something that I always have to remind people, because I am like my following is predominantly Red Sox fans. This list isn't specifically for the Red Sox. It's not like, oh, this guy is who they should really get. It's for the whole league. It's a lot of different factors. But my number two is Burnes. The number three is Alex Bregman, who, as much as I've heard people saying they want to trade for Bregman and then move Raffy to first. I'm just not. It's not even that. I think Sammy and I have gone back and forth on this a fair amount because we are actually. I made a group chat with both of you guys, but not big on the idea of them moving Raffy to first. There's a lot of reasons for that, but the number one guy that I have is number four, and that's Max Fried. I think Max Fried would be such a good fit in Boston. I think that he's the kind of pitcher that Andrew Bailey could maximize. I think he's been my concern with him prior to going through this process of learning about all the players that are going to be free agents was I was worried about his health. He hasn't gotten hurt that much. Like, the injury risk is very much overplayed.
Doesn't it feel like he's gotten hurt more than he has?
It does.
Like, on the surface, Max Fried, to me, before I started digging in, screamed injury prone. And then you look at his baseball reference, it's like he's making 28-plus starts almost every year.
Yeah.
Ed, can I ask you a question about Max Fried?
Yeah.
We got a nice listener question last week from a friend of the program, Sean Bergeron, who you might be familiar
Love
with.
Love Sean.
Very, very knowledgeable dude. He brought up a good point. He said, with Max Fried, great pitcher and everything, but he's got a very high ground ball rate, and the Red Sox infield has been not great. Trevor Story's there. It's a little bit better, but not exactly a reliable guy. What's your level of concern with a pitcher with that kind of profile?
I mean, obviously you would prefer guys that are striking people out if you're not confident in the defense, but I think just for starting pitching, you really can't be that choosy with it. I think Story helps a lot. I think Cassis is a better first baseman than people give him credit for, and I think the reps will help him there. It's nice having that big target. Second base is just like, who's that going to be? Is that going to be Christian Campbell? Is that going to be Vaughn Grissom? Is that going to be David Hamilton? I have absolutely no idea. But in the perfect world, like, you're going to have that whole alignment is going to change, right? That's at some point, because you've got Marcelo Meyer coming, you've got Christian Campbell coming. You can't fit all of them there, so something's going to have to give. Maybe that's where Raffy ends up moving to first base or something. Maybe that's where you make Raffy the DH. I'm not really sure there, but I don't think that if you have the opportunity to get a good pitcher, and Max Fried is a very good pitcher, I think you get him and you let the other stuff fall into place.
And not to mention, like, you talk about the alignment potentially changing soon. The alignment that we saw last year was all over the place just because of injuries. I mean, honestly, mainly just because of injuries. Because if you asked the Red Sox what they would have wanted their 140-plus game alignment to be, it would have been Casas at first. That didn't happen. Grissom at second. That didn't happen. Story at short. That didn't happen. Devers at third, that happened, but he's obviously the worst defender there.
And he was hurt, too.
That happened, that he was playing on, like, one knee. He didn't. Yeah. He's down two shoulders and a knee.
I'm incredibly critical of Devers' defense. I'm like, the first to bring it up. Like, love Rafael Devers. Think he's a great player. I'm thrilled to have him on the Red Sox forever. But I don't like the defense. But even with that, like, he wasn't even 100%. And I think it's important to note, Gordo, when we were in spring training, we watched Vaughn Grissom, and it looked like he was not comfortable making basic throws to second base or to first base from the second base position. And by the end of the year, he looked fine. at that position. Can you imagine, like, if he didn't miss all that time, the leap he could have taken? Like, he didn't look great at the end of the year, but he looked much improved compared to what we saw in spring training. So, you know, I don't like to be like, the injuries derailed this whole thing, but with the infield, I mean, come on. Trevor Story, that's the biggest one, of course. You lose Grissom. I think Casas, I agree with what Ed said. Casas, in the minors at least, and Ed, correct me if I'm wrong, you're the guru with minor league baseball. He was a good defender throughout the minor leagues. Like, not incredible, but solid. So, and big target, like you said, too. So I think the infield defense could be better, but that doesn't mean I'm supremely confident about it heading into 2025.
No, and I mean, you shouldn't be. The defense has been... Like, let's be real. The defense has been bad for the last several years. The offense, sorry, not the offense, the outfield defense, I'm much more confident in, especially you've got two Gold Glove candidates and a guy that wasn't a Gold Glove candidate that might actually be the best of the three of them. So, like, the outfield, I'm not even a little concerned about. But then, do you really want to fly ball pitcher in Fenway Park? Not really, just because it's such a small stadium. No. Like, you're going to, like, pull hitters are going to hit 1,000 home runs off of you. So it becomes, how picky are you about your starters? How confident are you that the defense is going to be better next year? I feel like I just don't feel like they're in a position where they can be like, okay, we need a strikeout pitcher, because it's just the strikeout pitchers just aren't as good that are available. It's not that, and it's also not that Fried doesn't strike people out. He gets plenty of those. So
yeah, I'm like nine per nine innings or something like that. Like low nines, like. Fine, yeah, solid. He's just not the reason we kind of framed it that way, like he's not a big strikeout guy, is because the guy we always talk about on Playtesty is Garrett Crochet. That's like, I've been like hammering that home. We're not even in the point of the offseason where you could trade for guys, excuse me.
Yeah.
But like I he's 13.1, 13 point something K's. Yeah. So that's different. So comparatively, Max Fried doesn't strike out a lot of guys, but if you're comparing him to the rest of the league, pretty solid.
Yeah.
Larry David Noyce. Not
above average to above average compared to the rest of the league.
Yeah, yeah. And just like a very good pitcher overall. So I think that Red Sox fans should be, you know, thrilled with either of those two. But your number one guy was Corbin Burnes. What's the thought process behind putting him number one? I think that's interesting.
It's close between the two of them. I just think that Burnes has had that success in the American League East, which is a harder division than the National League East. We've seen him do it for a bit more, I don't want to say consistently, but Fried hasn't had to deal with being like this big profile guy. Even with him being like the veteran with the Braves, like Spencer Strider was getting more attention than him. They've always had other guys. Their offense has always gotten them more attention. It's tough to be the guy that you're the big free agent acquisition. This team hasn't had good pitching in a while. You're the guy that's going to come in and save it. I feel more confident with Burnes being steady than I do Fried. But I think Fried is a better fit, if that makes sense, for the Red Sox. I think Burnes is the guy. Oh, we're talking about overall. I just think Burnes is more. The way that I end up doing it a lot of the time is, who do I think has the higher floor? And I think that Burnes has the higher floor. So yeah, if 100%. It's like two guys that are kind of equal, that's what I will put. What I will give them to be the tiebreaker.
Like, you can look at, if you want to look at fits for the Red Sox specifically, like, look no further than the arm they throw with. Red Sox don't have a left-handed starting pitcher.
Yeah,
and that's something I think is pretty important to fix, especially with the left-handed pitchers available. Whether you talk about Crochet via trade, you could talk about Fried via free agency, you could talk about Snell via free agency. Like, there's avenues to get that done. If you're the Red Sox and you're going to shell out big prospects or big money, you might as well, if it's available, fit the hole entirely.
Yeah. Well, let's be real. What they should be doing is getting one guy from free agency and still trading for another guy. Like,
who would you take out of the rotation?
I don't see any reason they can't trade for Crochet and also sign someone. It really, like, it's just money.
In that scenario, would you be like, would you be trading Cutter Crawford, or would you be entering the season with six bona fide major league starters?
I think you have to trade. I think you probably have to trade Crawford to get whoever the starter is, unfortunately. And Crochet is going to be, I don't know. We know Crochet is going to be on the block. We're not sure who else is, really. Mm-hmm. Like, people talk about the Seattle starters a lot. I don't really know why they would trade out of their strength, but hey, they might, if they really like a hitter, maybe they will do that. But there are different guys that you hear rumored. I think Crochet we talk about the most because we know he's available and he is a good fit for the Red Sox. I don't know if he's as good as the price is going to be, but you also can't really be choosy when you're trying to do this. Like, that's the thing. Like, no one's going to be 100% the perfect guy. I don't think. I think that that's really hard. I think even Chris Sale, there was injury risk with him when they first got him. And definitely. Yeah, he got hurt. He just lasted for a couple of years before that.
Ed, that's a great point. You said that there's not like a perfect fit. I feel like that's something that I kind of partially blame it on the Chaim Bloom era, because he was very, you know, hesitant to make a trade if he didn't feel it was quote unquote perfect. And I feel, you know, like the fan base was following that for years. And it, for a lot of us, you know, myself included at times, you're kind of looking at these guys that they might add via trade or free agency, and you find like the smallest thing that might not be a fit. And I think that the Red Sox, like you alluded to a minute ago, they're not really in a spot to be super picky. Now, in like a trade scenario, maybe a little bit more, but free agency wise, they haven't been spending a lot. There's not a ton of great starting pitching options. There's like a few, but there's a lot of teams that need starting pitching. So, yeah, I think you have to get the best fit and be okay with it not being perfect. Maybe eat the back end of a contract that you might not be 100% in love with, or pay a little bit extra in the way of prospects if we're talking a trade. So something like that. I like that point. Like, it doesn't have to be perfect. It has to make the team significantly better.
Yeah. I mean, you just have to look at the way that I'm looking at the rotation right now is that I see them as being a good rotation if you can push everyone back one spot. So that means that you have to get a number one. It doesn't have to be an ace even. It just has to be a number one. Because if you put Tanner Houck in the number two spot, that's a good number two starter. I'm fine with that. If you put, I don't know, like any, you can put them in any order you want, by the way. Brayan Bello, Cutter Crawford, and Lucas Giolito. Like, no, we haven't seen Giolito pitch this year, but because he got hurt, but I'm still pretty confident that he'll come back and at least be a serviceable number five starter, you know. And they have a couple guys in AAA that aren't bad either for the first time in a while, and Priester, Fitz. If those guys, you know, if like somebody got, if and when someone inevitably gets hurt, but it just doesn't work if Houck is your number one. You need somebody to push all of these guys back and put them into a better space. Even with Bayo, who I think I'm probably higher on Bayo than most. Pitching development takes time, and I think that he actually does have the capacity to be a number one, but he's not there yet, and it's a lot of pressure to put on him to expect him to be anything close to that in, what, like his second full season in the majors? Like, that's or third? Like, that's so some of the, like, look how long it took Tanner Houck to get there.
Ed, Bayo works out with Pedro Martinez in the offseason. Come on. They're both the same build. They're both right-handed. God, they're the same
guy. So bad for him. And also, do you remember when Sadon Rafael was coming up through the mail? And everyone was like, oh, man, he reminds me so much of Mookie.
Dude, that's like, insane. Oh, you can't do that to a kid like that. Oh.
No, he's a good player. I like Sadon Rafael. I don't think people realize just how good Mookie Betts is.
People with Casas, they're like, he's basically Joey Votto. That's a Hall of Famer, man.
Oh, we saw Freddie Freeman with him too. Joey Votto.
I still agree. That's his. Listen, I love Kristen Casas. I really do. And I do think the ceiling for him is Freddie Freeman with more power and less batting average. He's not there yet. Like, Freddie Freeman wasn't there yet for a while either. It takes, like, development takes time. And I think sometimes we expect people to come up and do what, like, Adley Rutschman or Julio Rodriguez did. But that's the thing. People forget they had a really good rookie year, and then they slumped a little bit because the league caught up with them, and then they have to go and make adjustments. And it's an ongoing struggle with that. These players, it takes them time until they're at that Rafi Devers level where it's like, here's $300 million. I feel comfortable with it.
Ed, question for you on the subject of Casas. It feels like it's the constant conversation on Twitter, and My favorite tweet of the offseason, early favorite for tweet of the offseason, was Bill James saying that Tristan Casas has a 30 to 40% chance of being a Hall of Fame caliber hitter.
Yep.
I absolutely love Tristan Casas. Obviously 30, 40% is crazy. Do you buy into the whole trade thing? Would you trade him? Is there a world where you'd do it? And if so, what is the world?
Okay. Is there a world where are we talking like hypothetically, like, just somebody decides to be really fucking stupid and
within reason
for a guy that isn't proven. Like, yeah, of course there's like, of course there is a universe where somebody goes crazy and decides to give you all of their best players for him. Like, right. aren't there unlimited universes or something? So maybe that happened in one of them. I don't know.
Otani and Betts for Casas. Who says no? Like, yeah, within reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Within reason. I don't see it with Casas because I don't think that for a first baseman, you're going to get somebody of Casas's caliber's value. If that makes sense, because look at who we're not seeing a lot of these conversations about trading somebody like Jaron Duran or Roman Anthony, even though if we look at what is actually on the roster, they're probably easier to replace. We're doing Casas because we think that a first baseman matters less. And I think with Casas, the combination of power and his eye and his defense and his, like, just his, people get really stuck on the personality of Tristan Casas, but this is a guy that is obsessive with his craft. Like, he works his ass off. And he's a big dude. It's hard for big dudes to stay healthy sometimes. He's got to figure that out. That's the thing that prevents him, for me, of being, like, a sure thing, is can he stay healthy? But if you're just looking at him from, like, a pure talent level, I don't actually think Bill James's assessment is totally crazy. I think that it's just very hard to assume that a guy that's gotten hurt the last three seasons and he's what, like 24, 25 isn't, like, that's not going to continue being a problem. That's where it's kind of difficult. But I just can't see a trade where you're really getting not just good value for him, but value that really helps the Red Sox. Like, realistically, what they would need to trade him with to get an ace, they would probably, another team's going to want some prospects with it. And at a certain point, it's just like, why am I dealing from all this stuff that I already have for a guy that, you know, pitchers are universally going to be risky. So you kind of have to stick with what you've got sometimes. That's my feeling on it. I know other people.
No, I'm with you. I'm with you. Yeah. There's practically no, I don't think there is a world within reason where I would trade him.
And that's the key part though, is the within reason, because it's like, wow, the Tigers really want him. They're giving the Red Sox Tarik Skubal. Yeah, of course you do that. Or like, I don't know, like the Mariners decide that they really, they can afford to trade from their rotation and they decide to give like Logan Gilbert or something.
Yeah. I'm with you guys. I'm on that. The thing that bothers me, I don't like when people say like, don't trade this guy, period. Like, of course, I don't want Tristan Casas to be traded. And Gordo and I go back and forth all the time about this. There's like 99.9% of me does not want Casas to be traded. He's a great player, great dude. He's been great to us at Fenway. But Logan Gilbert, that's a need. Someone like
Call
that.
And
even that, I don't know if I would do it because it's 3 years versus what, Gordo, five?
It's four years for Casas. So
4 years.
That's the key with me is the years of control. And also, the fact that the Red Sox don't have to give him up. Like, they have a lot of valuable pieces. Like, they could trade from other pieces or should be able to trade from other pieces. Like, you don't that's even the Skubal thing, like naturally, like Tarik Skubal, like that sounds incredible. But at the same time, it's like, I would rather trade from one of the big four and Willier Abreu and Cutter Cross, like package, like make a good package and get a lower tier ace. I'd rather do that than trade Casas for Skubal.
I mean, the problem always
is, I don't know.
No, the problem always is also that you just don't know who the other team wants and who they're going to value. Like, I listen to the Sox Prospects podcast all the time, and Ian Cundill tends to be very much like, oh, that wouldn't work to get him. That wouldn't work. And if you're looking at it like in a vacuum, yeah, he's usually right. But then why do we see all of these trades that happen that you're like, wait, really? That's all it costs to get this guy? You just don't know what other teams are seeing. You're assuming that other teams are going to be smart about it or that they value the same thing in players that you do. And I just don't – the more I have followed this and the more I've been like, oh, they would – like that's not – like you're going to need to trade a lot more than this guy's worth. And then it's like, okay, like you didn't have to. It feels like it's a lot more random than we like to pretend it is.
Yeah. And you see so many of those trades go down where it's like, cause sometimes you see the asks. I'm trying to remember, I think maybe like the Dylan Cease ask price, from the middle of the season before the off season that he got traded, where they were asking for like Bayo plus, and then he ends up going like the package he went for, like no shade to the guys they got, but it's not Brian. That's not a Brian Bayo package.
No.
So yeah, a lot of it's right place, right time.
Thorpe. Yeah. No. It was Saint Rafaela for Aaron Savali, I remember, was like another one that in 2023 could have been made. And it's just like, no. I don't know if I can deal with Dave O'Brien mentioning that he pitched for Northeastern for 5 days. Yeah, I'm not sure.
God, no, that's the kind of trade. That's the kind of trade you make when you're a piece away, not when you're rebuilding.
Exactly.
And good that they didn't, because Savali ended up not like the Guardians did sell at his literal peak value. So good for them. Yeah. Okay, Ed, I got to ask you, because you are the owner of the Bullpen Trust-O-Meter, all right?
Yes, I am.
Love the graphic, love the posts. That thing's got to be in huge flux right now with Kenley Jansen and Chris Martin not on the board right now. What would you do? Like, who do you want to be at the top of the Bullpen? Like, how do you want them to address what needs to be at the top of the Bullpen Trust-O-Meter?
I mean, they need a high leverage lefty. I think that's the first thing that you have to get even before figuring out who the closer is. You need to get a guy that can. If you're going into the season with like Bernardino as your first lefty, he's fine as a second lefty, but he doesn't have that high octane stuff that you really want out of that. I mean, listen, Tanner Scott, if you find a way to sign that guy, like that's pretty cool. Knowing the Red Sox, probably not going to happen, but they need someone like that. I mean, AJ Minter's a free agent. I kind of like him. But I think that's the first point. The closer situation is really interesting in spring training.
Yeah, what would you do with that?
Honestly, if I'm being 100% honest, I know people really like Hendricks and he's had a ton of success. I think Slayton's already the better pitcher. I would just put Justin Slayton there. And if it eases Hendrickson a little bit more because he's been out for what, like basically 3 years now, because he missed before he needed the Tommy John, he had lymphoma, missed a lot of the year from that. I'd rather just ease him in, just, you know, just situations that aren't quite as stressful. Let him get his feel for the game back. And then if Slayton's struggling, you have a guy that's done it before right there. After that, I mean, I guess Michael Fulmer is another guy that is another veteran that is taking one of those roles. You have to think if they don't lose him in the Rule 5 draft or whatever. That'd be weird if they lost him in the Rule 5 draft, wouldn't it?
Weirdest potential Rule 5 pick of all time. That was crazy. Totally, I didn't even think about that. What was it? Cotillo surfaced that as a possibility? I guess it's possible.
I thought that was a typo. When you wrote that, I thought that was a typo. I was like, oh man, that's a bad typo. And then I read it. I'm like, oh, that wasn't a typo.
No.
So Hendricks, some context on Liam Hendricks. 2022, he pitched 58 games. And then the following year, 2023, only 5 games. Obviously, didn't pitch in 2024. Yeah. So it has been a while. And we've spoken about this before. I was super bummed out that he didn't come back to pitch five more games, just a few innings, just so we could see what we're working with. Because now it's a complete mystery rather than a partial mystery. So
you guys got to talk to him during spring training, I remember. Did you talk to him at all during the season?
No. Yes. A little bit. Yeah, a little bit.
That is a guy that just really wanted to pitch.
Like, can I tell him?
Really just wanted to be pitching.
Quick Liam Hendricks story. Gordo, the rain delay.
Yeah, you got to.
So we're in the we were on the field getting kind of quotes or something, and the weather was supposed to be bad, so it was kind of like dead out there. And then it really starts pouring. It was Red Sox Yankees.
So bad.
Coming down. So we run into the dugout. We're kind of hiding. All the players are off the field. Everyone's off the field. There's nobody out there. But in the dugout, me, Gordo, Liam Hendricks, and then he's talking to a group of people taking a tour. Like, no clue who these people are. And he's just kind of like holding court, talking to them. And Gordo and I are just chatting. We're like, oh man, when do we want to go up and get lunch? Are we going to stick around? Like, how long? And then it starts really pouring. And Gordo goes, oh, it's getting hard. And Liam Hendricks turns and he's like, oh, it's what she said. I just go right back to talking.
Yeah, like mid sentence, he was just in the middle of a sentence with these people. That's what she said.
Yeah, right. It's what she said. Yeah, to be
continue on. Yeah, he's
funny as hell. So much better than I could even hope to.
He said I sounded more because we did that whole bit with him in spring training. I was like, "Can you grade my accent?" Oh, it's gone on, Liam. How are you, mate? And he was like, "Nah, you sound like a Kiwi." And I'm like, "I sound like I'm from New Zealand." And we're like, "What's the difference?" And he's like, you say no instead of now. I'm like, all right, man. Yeah. Not that good at it. But yeah, dude, great guy. Like super fun to talk to. He called me a dipshit within 30 seconds of meeting me, which was funny.
Yep.
Exactly how I would have imagined him prior to meeting him. Great guy.
The thing that I thought was the funniest about him is that, like you were saying, is just he just talks to everyone like he's known them for like he went to high school with them or something. He's a good guy to have on your team regardless. He's like that type of personality, like the Johnny Gomes, like just like characters of the game. I think championship caliber teams need that. That, you know, like guys that keep everybody together and in focus. And it's unfortunate what happened with Kenley, because it does seem like he was very much mentally checked out. Mm-hmm. His second season here. Hopefully whoever they do bring in, I think they do need some leadership guys. Do you guys have any feeling one way or another about bringing Chris Martin back? Because to me it feels like a no-brainer, but he wants to do one more year. He was good when he was healthy. Like, just bring the dude back for another season.
Tall.
Like a ball magnet. Like, it felt like he kept on almost getting killed this year.
Yeah. Oh my god, yeah. Every two or three games, a line drive right back at him.
Yeah,
but I would bring him back. I think it was Cotillo who reported though that he might want to pitch closer to home in Texas to finish off. Which, yeah, like I get it, and it's not like the Red Sox are the team that just lost in the World Series, and it's like, oh man, unfinished business. It's like, all right, like Chris Martin definitely believes that this team can go places, but it's like there's other teams close to home that can also. One of them won the World Series last year, and one of them has been in the ALCS every year up until this year. So, I mean, I would understand if he wanted to go there. One of those
big loss, big loss, like underrated big loss. Just the calming sense from a fan perspective. Let's take it from a fan perspective. Sitting on my couch watching, it's the sixth or seventh inning, and the Red Sox are up by one. Just having in the back of my mind, okay, you go to Martin in the seventh or the eighth, and then you go to the insert closer here.
Yeah.
Like that's, yeah. I need that for my mental health. I need a Chris Martin on the team, or else I'm going to be anxious all the time.
Well, can I tell you though? What if I told you that not elderly, but late 30s relievers with a very good track record, there is not like a short list of those. Like there are a bunch of those guys right now that are going to be free agents. Just to name a few here from my list, the guy I have ranked 17th, Kirby Yates, 38 years old. Probably the best closer in baseball other than Emmanuel Clase this year. And we saw maybe even better now if you count the postseason.
He's 38?
He's 38. Yeah, he's been around for a while. He was originally a Red Sox draft pick, too.
Hawaiian guy. He's 38, but he's like a fake 38. He's a fake 38 though, because his arm might as well be like 32.
Yeah, no, that could.
He just hasn't pitched.
Fair.
I guess.
David Robertson, he's going to be 40 this year. Another Texas reliever, but a guy I think he's from Rhode Island or something. I don't know how he's never pitched for the Red Sox before.
That was almost
Mariano. He was young Mariano Rivera when he started with the Yankees. They were like, dude, he's a reliever. He throws a cutter. He's right-handed. This is Mariano Jr. Never happened. He was all right.
He had an okay run. Blake Treinen is a guy that he's looked unhittable. I love him. That he's healthy with the Dodgers. That's a guy.
He lived with my buddy. So he lived down the street from me for like 8 months or so, because he used to train in Hudson, Mass. Great guy. Such a nice dude.
Why Hudson?
You ever hear of Cressy Performance?
No,
it's like it's Eric Cressy, who I think now is like the lead trainer for the Yankees, and the Yankees pitching coach was also like their pitching dude. And they have a whole facility out in Hudson, and they've got like another one in Florida, and MLB prospects will literally get, they have a program where if you have a gym membership with Cressy, you can get a ton of money off of there, maybe even get it for free if you house an MLB prospect, because they just want to be here so they can train at that gym. So Treinen spent the summer or spent the winter in Wayland, Massachusetts. And I watched the Red Sox win the World Series in 13 with him. Like,
wow.
Yeah, really nice guy. Like, was not like a highly regarded prospect at the time.
No, he wasn't. I think he was with the A's for a while.
Yeah, he was with the Nationals at this time. And, I mean, never would have imagined that the guy that, where I was just like playing ping pong with would be like pitch. He's probably going to pitch tonight as we record this. Like, he's absolutely filthy.
He's one of those guys like Clay Holmes ish where they throw the ball and you're like, how does it do that? Like, how do you make a baseball move like that? Freakish. Better than Clay Holmes, by the way.
Oh, so yeah. Well, I mean, Holmes.
Oh, yeah.
bunch of guys on the Yankees just lit some money on fire this year between him and Verdugo. Like those were guys with some really big contracts coming in, and now they're probably going to have to get 1 year prove it deals. Unfortunately for, well, I don't have an issue with Holmes. I just, Verdugo just kind of like, this is the way things ended in Boston and everything just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth.
Dude, I would take Holmes on the Red Sox. I wouldn't take that. Not as a closer.
I'll ask you this. Clay Holmes, say he goes to the Dodgers, over under 1.42 ERA.
Over, but he saves like 50 games.
Yeah.
It's 0.58, but he's got 51 saves.
It's going to be like a 1.70 or something like that. But yeah, he'd be... God, some of these teams are just like, man, what are they doing? Where they're just like, oh, I know how to fix that guy, and then they do like look at Ryan Brazier. It's kind of crazy. Oh,
I know. That's maybe my least fit. I'm trying to think of an example of that I hate more, just because the Red Sox have had some guys go through there, and like I guess they could kind of float under the radar, like Jeffrey Springs. Like I don't know what they did with him or what they saw with him, but Ryan Brazier, they worked with him forever, trying to fix whatever the hell it was that he was doing wrong with them. The Dodgers are like, here's
a cutter.
You want, yeah,
throw a cutter.
Throw a cutter.
Try this. All right. Yeah. And now you get how many, what did he sign for this past offseason? Was it 2 years?
Yeah. He got a 2 year deal. Like not a bad one either. It wasn't like he was
got a moment though. We still got a Brazier moment though with the Red Sox. It's not like Caleb Ort where he was just completely useless here. Like we got the get the fuck back in the box. That's great. Gary Sanchez. That was kind of cool.
He was in Boston.
There were like two bright Brazier careers. It's like you had the 18 Brazier, and he was really good in 21. People forget about that. Like he came back at the end of the year and he was incredible.
He threw four straight games. Remember, like in that. Remember when they needed to win against the Nationals, and I swear he was pitching in every game that series.
He did, yeah. I think you're right about the four straight, which for those who don't know, like you do not see guys go four straight ever.
No, it's not a good idea to do
that. Listen to this. Ryan Brazier's major league career, almost 297 games, let's call it 300, 3.85 ERA over 285 innings. Good for him, man.
Yes.
Considering how much that was, like, take the 2023 with the Red Sox and 2022 out of that. Like, that's got to be even better, right?
I got to the point with him, and this rarely happens to me because I have no soul, but where I didn't like watching him pitch because I felt so bad. I just felt terrible because you could tell, like, and I think he had some family stuff too, and you could just see it on his face. Like, he doesn't want to be pitching like shit out there. No, and when he got to the Dodgers and pitched well. Yeah, no. And when he went to the Dodgers and pitched well, a lot of people were hating on him, and I was kind of quietly in the corner like, good job, Ryan. You can do it. Good job, Brazier.
Relievers are like kickers, aren't they? Like, where it's like you only notice them when they're getting lit up, and you can have a guy who's doing a really good job, and no one's going to care because you expect it. Like, no one was talking about how Emmanuel Clase was going to get Cy Young Award votes until he got his ass kicked by the Yankees. Like, mm-hmm. It is what it is. You know, it's unfortunate for them, but kind of comes with being a relief pitcher.
All right, Ed. I got to ask you. So I don't know about you and Sammy. It might be true for you guys too, but Ed, we met for the first time last year at Winter Weekend.
Yep, that was the first time I met Sammy also.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How pissed off are you that that's not going to be a thing anymore?
Specifically, like, man, isn't it gonna be like they have it at Fenway or something? Or
it doesn't count.
No, it's
you take the gambling and the bar scene out of it.
Am I?
Fucking nipples are gonna be rock hard. It's gonna suck. You're gonna be freezing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a very questionable choice. It's like I live like 15 minutes away from Fenway, so if they do it there, like that's kind of convenient. But no, it's like it was really fun. It was nice, kind of having the excuse. It was almost like a trade convention or something where you get to go and like schmooze with people that you wouldn't really be seeing otherwise. Like I met you guys there. I got to hang out with some of the players, some of the journalists. Like it was really nice because I think that we're all so like chronically online doing this stuff. You forget sometimes like, oh, these are real people. And like they're like all have kind of the same thing that I'm like weirdly autistically hyper focused on. Like it's cool getting to see that in person. It really is.
Yeah, the issue with it being at Fenway, because I also live really close to Fenway, so does Sammy. Like, by God, yeah. Like, is it great to not have to drive whatever, hour and a half, 2 hours, whatever it takes us to get to Springfield. Yes. But if we're not ripping fireball shots with each other and like players and stuff, like, what are we really doing?
No.
I still, my wife bought shots for me and Chris Murphy. That was, I think, the highlight of it, was that I did a fireball shot and like one of those, like the cold ones, whatever they're called. Like,
dude, the McGillicuddy. I gave you that. That's the McGillicuddy. That's
McGillicuddy. Yeah.
So sick the next morning. I hated that.
You were fucked up. I went to bed way before you guys did.
No, but like, I
left at like 11.
I had like four drinks. I just have no tolerance. That's why I don't drink a lot. Like I just like once in a while, like I'll have like a little glass of something and I'll sip on it. But I don't like to like, I don't like doing shots. I can have beers all night long. I have 1,000 beers. Be fine. But shots, I'll die. I can't do it. Actually, yeah. Chris Murphy actually had to, he took one of mine. And I was like, thank you so much, man. I was like, you want this? Please take it. He was like, okay. And he was fine, but not me.
Well, the pro athletes are just built different.
Oh, yeah. The thing with Sammy is he goes into winter weekend and he says he's not going to drink this time around. And then he does.
You fool.
And it's the same thing. It's the same
thing. First time it was worth it, though. First time I got like a life-changing experience meeting Wade Boggs while I was hungover and being like, what's your hangover cure? And he was like, scrambled eggs and chocolate milk. And I was like, oh, that was the coolest moment of my life. Cool. Never going to top that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
That will be missed. Maybe there will be some form of fireball shots at Fenway Park, but I have my doubts. I have my doubts.
Did we bully John Henry too hard? Do you think that's what happened with the booing and like Sam Kennedy? Like, did he get bullied too hard?
I don't think John Henry cares enough. I really don't.
I think other people in the organization care enough.
Yeah,
it may not be John Henry.
Canceled it, though?
I don't know. I feel like they have to be making money off of it too. Like they're all about making money. That's all that, like, not all they care about.
There weren't that many people there last year though. Like I was being told, cause that was the first time I'd ever been to one of these. And like, I was told like they're usually much bigger, which, you know, that kind of checks out. Like you've had a couple of bad years. You didn't really have any star power there. Raffy didn't show up. And like, yes. Do I personally get excited about prospects? Yes. But it's tough to convince like, you know, like Fitzy, who's been a fan since like 1963, that Roman Anthony is going to be the next like Carly Yastrzemski or something. It's a lot harder to do that.
It's fair enough. I'm with you, man. Yeah. Johnny Dickhead from next
door. The thing is, they're still going to make the money. I think that the reason they're canceling it is because what could they do? Like, what would they have to do this offseason to not have people show up and boo them? Because even if they have an offseason that people like, they're still going to get booed because they've missed the playoffs 5 out of the last 6 years. Like unless they get like Vlad and Max Fried, or like if they sign Juan Soto. And
I was going to say, you sign Juan Soto away from the Yankees, that gets it done.
Yeah, if they get like Crochet, exactly. You know, if the narrative, if they trade for Crochet, then the narrative is going to, people are going to be like casual baseball fans make, this guy, he's injury prone. What are you talking about? He got limited last year.
They'll say, why are you trading the prospects that you sold us so much on and you're still not spending money? Like, this guy's making nothing. You got so much money to spend and you're not even approaching the tax. Go over the tax.
Socks.
And you know what? They're not wrong. If you said that, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
No, it makes no, like, if this is going back to what we were talking about earlier, but I don't think that trading the players should be the priorities. They have so much money to spend. They have so much money to burn on guys that you could sign Juan Soto and still probably get a couple of other pitchers without going over the luxury tax.
Exactly.
It is comical how much money they have to spend. So if you're just trading for guys and you're not spending, like that's a very different type of disappointment. Like, and I don't care. Like, extend guys. I don't care. Do what you give them, like what they did for Sadon Rafaela. You know, like keep them here for a while. Give Roman Anthony the Jackson Jurio deal. I don't care, but just throw some of that collateral around for crying out loud. Like for fuck's sake, guys. Like, fans are only going to be patient for so long. You're charging the most money in the league for tickets. You haven't been good for a couple of years. Even 2021, you kind of lucked into the playoffs and you did really well. But at some point, it's not even like put your nuts on the table and take a risk. I don't know, but you don't have to take all of these risks. Just spend the money. Just spend the money.
It's not an unrealistic ask. I would say though, I think fans have already like run out of patience because like you guys saw, I was talking to you guys at the end of the season. Like, I had like a friend who had tickets to a game in September, and I already, you know, said yes to the plan. So, and I'm saying, like, God, I do not want to spend the evening at Fenway watching like a meaningless game with only like 15,000 people. And they're going to be like, actually, there were 29,000 people here. It was a pretty good crowd. But no, it wasn't. Like, that, I was at those games late in the year when the games, when it was like they have 1% chance to make the playoffs. They're pretty much dead. Not a lot of people there. And the people who were there left pretty early, understandably. And the vibe was that of like a nice morgue, like a nicer upscale morgue. Basically,
upscale morgue.
Yeah. Fancy morgue.
I had fun there, but I also I got into this great habit this season of, if I wasn't that excited about the game I was going to, I would just take some edibles before it, and then I would have a great time. So, you know, I'm just saying, that. Sammy, like that's one word that's called an experience enhancer.
You know what? I'll do that with you one time next year, because I like to with edibles and like any pot related item, I save it for end of the day before bed because I don't like being in public in that state. But I understand that one time. I'll give it a try, just like a little tickle, see how it feels. If I hate it, I'll leave.
I'm stone cold sober right now, but I tend to I feel like if I go back and listen to like a podcast that I've done, they're generally better if I did an edible about 40 minutes beforehand. Like, I think I've gotten better at it, which, by the way, you guys are like, have gotten really comfortable with this. It's really awesome seeing like the growth from like episode one, episode two to like, what is this, 100, episode 142. Like, it's like anything else. The reps just make you better. They just make you better. Like, you guys are killing it.
I appreciate that, Ed. Thank you.
But I think I just feel a little bit more like, If I have an interesting thought, I will be more likely to share it if I'm like a little bit in an altered mind state. So I think that for me, like what I like to listen to, like I kind of prefer that. But you guys have a different sort of show than what I do. Also,
Ed,
like my show, like you guys have like actual sponsorship and stuff. Like
you gotta tell me. So we saved this for the end, sort of in place. Enough said, because this is really the moment we've all been waiting for. But I want to. There was a clip, and I forget what game it was after. There's a chance that it was after the game where the Sox let up a game-tying homer to Wyatt Langford.
Oh, God, that was a nightmare. That was the worst game of the season. Either that or when they got beat, like, 20-whatever to the Rockies. Like, one of those two.
Yankees. Down to the last strike. Yankees. Nothing beats that.
We were there. You had a clip with Hogdale where he was on an absolute rampage. And you're just like playing music, like you're like sitting in like your white like beater, like playing music, like just like
it was.
Staring at him.
I know what you're talking about. It was the song that they play when they give up a home run at a Woosahawks game. Like the other team hits a home run, and which is like, yeah, if you're ever just like scrolling on like TikTok or whatever, it's like the sad nostalgia music. That's what was playing in the background. Sorry, what was your question?
Okay, well, first, do you remember what game that was after? But I want to ask about Hogdale, but tell me first if you know the game.
I think it was the Wyatt Langford game. Let's just say that because
that was so funny.
Like, that checks out. That checks out.
Before that turned my whole mood around.
He asked you, he was like, ready? And you're like, uh-huh. Oh, my God! Dude, he's so fucking funny, that guy. He lives kind of like West Coast or Western.
He's in Iowa.
Yes, there, and he's got to come to Fenway next year at some point. We got to have a Hogdale day.
So if you guys aren't familiar with the Iowa Enigma, the legend Hogdale,
give us the origin. Give me everything. How did you find Hogdale, and tell us how you got to this point with Hogdale?
I met Hogdale. I was doing Pesky Report back in 2021, and like they're still around, but it's like it's a totally different group than when I was there. But Hogdale and I were on the Sunday shows together, and he's like 10 years younger than me. Doesn't really come off that way. He's the oldest 24-year-old that I think I've ever met, but we just got along really well. We vibed really well. The more we were recording together, the more reps that we had, the more like, it was just fun working with him, and I didn't want to work with any of the other people on the show. And there was some dysfunction behind the scenes on Pesky Report that I think has been pretty well, it's been talked to death what was going on with that. So at the end of last year, we had been talking about it a little bit. It was me and Hogdale, then our buddy Ryan Brady, who was doing that too. It's kind of like, I don't know, I feel like we could do we could have more fun with this if we were just doing our own thing with it. So we decided to go and do our own show from that. And then Hogdale started doing the Hogdale stream about a month into the season. And there was like a switch flipped with him. Because when we were on Pesky Report, he was very knowledgeable, but he didn't have the confidence that he has now. Like, he'd go on rants, but it was almost like there was like a little bit of like self-awareness with the rants where he knew he was like trying to amp it up for the audience a little bit. Something happened when he started doing the stream and he realized that, oh, like people will listen to this and people actually want to hear what I have to say. And it's like, to me at least, he just sort of ran with that. So you ended up just getting him being like, cause it used to be like, he just ended up agreeing with me, I feel like. And I don't know if that was him being polite or what, but I've had him say like, okay, yeah, that's great. You're fucking wrong. Like, shit like that to me all the time now, which is a lot more, I think, fun for the listener and for me, because like, I'm not really big on circle jerks with these things. Like, I feel like a lot of, not necessarily podcasts, but just like on, like even on like Red Sox Twitter, you'll see like somebody tweet something and then you have like 50 people just saying the exact same thing back to them. And I don't think that you learn anything that way. I don't think that it's terribly interesting. And with Hogdale, it's completely genuine. He's not like saying things to try to get attention. I think we're both very, we both have a distaste for that talk radio. Like, we're just going to say what gets us the most attention sort of thing. So when he says something like what he said about the Red Sox after the Wyatt Langford home run, you know, he means it. You know that that is coming from a genuine place. And that's been like really fun to work with. And it's been really fun seeing that develop. And this is a kid that doesn't have any formal training. This is a kid that was, when he started doing this, was working at like a Casey's Pizza when he was I think he must've been like 21 or something. And now he has a pretty, like he has his Jared Carabas wore his face on a shirt. He has subscribers on his Twitch. Like, people want to meet him if he were to come up here for Winter Weekend or something.
Oh, dude. If Hogdale came to Fenway, the amount imagine? Of people, oh, dude, I want to be there just to document that and see all the attention. Like, he's very likable. I feel like there's nothing unlike.
And because he's genuine as hell.
Yeah, and everyone can relate to him. Because when he gets mad, like, seriously, when I tell you guys in our little chat, when Hogdale does a rant, and I'm like, dude, I need to listen to this right now. I'm not joking. I'm not embellishing. Like, that shit makes me feel so much better because I'm like, yes, this is what my head is telling me, and I like can't put into words like how angry I am. And I like try to do a good job of toning down my rage, but you know, sometimes I want to go on these kinds of rants, and Hogdale kind of does it for the average guy like myself. So I think
sometimes the problem with someone like you getting angry is that you're just too objectively handsome, Sammy. No one wants to hear a handsome guy get pissed off. It's like, fuck you. Like, like what do you have to complain about?
Thank you. I don't know how to respond to that. You guys always call me old and stuff and like act like I'm from like 1942. So thank
how
you.
How old? You're what, like 30?
No, not yet. Almost.
Yeah, he's getting there.
I'm 34. I'm like the old man on all of this stuff, so.
You definitely don't look 34. I mean, maybe your beard is hiding it, but
is entirely to make me look a little bit older because I do look.
It's intimidating. It's very intimidating.
I also like, it's funny being on this and you guys are both fairly clean shaven because I noticed I was doing some like guest show, getting some like guest appearances on some like Red Sox podcast. And it's like everybody's a white brunette dude with like a beard. So I started shaving after I realized that. And then, you know, like we haven't been doing anything this month. So I was like, okay, I guess I can let the beard grow back. But I was like, I would take screenshots of them and send them to my wife and be like, look, they're wearing the uniform.
The reason I don't have any facial hair right now, I went to the gym the other day and I was like sweating. And I think it felt like itchy, like I had dry skin. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to shave my whole face and then moisturize. So I shaved everything. And then I had like minty smooth moisturized skin for a day. God. And I was like, oh, this feels good. So
like
maybe
you need to talk to whoever the because I do Pod by the River with Hogdale, but I also do To the Show We Go with Andrew Parker. And that's more of like the way that I describe this to people is that Pod by the River is like the talk show, and to the show we go is just like straight news because we just do interviews on that one. Like, it's, we're talking mostly to the players. But Parker, we have a question on this. He's obsessed with Zaxby's, like the chicken.
Oh, yeah. Every guy.
They never say Zaxby's for the answer. It's like, what's your favorite fried chicken place? And I think like Blaze Jordan finally said Zaxby's, and it was like the best day of Parker's life. But it got to the point that he got married a few weeks ago and Zaxby's sent him congratulations.
Did they really?
No, they did, because we always tweet about it. We always are like, hey, Zaxby's. And that's been my thing.
That's
like,
awesome.
You're just playing the long game to get Zaxby's sponsorship, aren't you? Like, that's all this is about.
And it's smart. It's smart. Yeah, because it's his thing. I love Andrew Parker.
Oh,
he's,
my God.
He's another winter weekend guy who have I seen him outside of winter weekend? I don't know. But I love him. He's such a good guy. One of my favorites. Yeah. If you don't follow Andrew Parker on Sox Twitter, make sure you do that, because he's killing it with the Woo Sox game too.
Yeah, he really is. The thing that I really appreciate about him and Chris Hendrick, these are the Beyond the Monster guys, is that they do a really good job of keeping their opinions out of their reporting. I think that that can be challenging, especially in the Boston media. But like, I really have an appreciation of things when they're just getting the scoops and not trying to like make it fit a narrative or anything. Like, that's always really nice. Like, I feel like there's almost like everybody is trying to an extent to be Dan Shaughnessy or like put that Dan Shaughnessy spin on it. And he can do that because he's like 70 or 80 or whatever he is now. And like, yeah, that's his whole shtick. But like, it doesn't, like, not everything has to be a
extreme.
Not everything has to fall into a narrative. Sometimes the news is just the news. Sometimes the guy is just hurt, and it's not because John Henry is cheap and is just trying to destroy the team or something.
No, it's the truth. I love that you've got, because you've got the connects with the right people, like doing the shows with the people you do. I think Hogdale might need to be the next Sox Twitter guest.
You need to get Hogdale on here. He's so funny. Like he also, this isn't even a complaint with Hogdale, but I've had times that I'm recording with him and we just like accidentally go like 2 hours because we get stuck on like some totally non-baseball related topic. And we just kind of, that's the downside of recording when you're on edibles, by the way, is that you'll just kind of keep going like about stuff that, like, I don't know who's still listening to this an hour and a half in, but if you are, hey, we're talking about existential philosophy now.
How does existential philosophy affect the movement of Brian Baio's changeup from year to year, brother?
It doesn't, but it does affect Hogdale's depression.
Oh,
we'll talk about that. And then
Brian Baio has Hogdale's mental health in his hands. That's great.
I mean, that is true. But isn't that true for all of us? Like, don't we all get kind of priced off?
They all have all of our mental health in their hands, man.
I think people think I'm joking. Like, when I say that shit, I think people think I'm joking, and I'm not. Like, when the Red Sox are bad, like, Gordo has seen me, like, when they're bad, we like turn on the camera and I'm like, all right, let's fucking go. Let's just go. I can't even talk. Like,
that's why these podcasts are therapy.
Dude, I need it. Like, every time the Red Sox get like smoked in a series or have a bad loss, I'm always like, I don't want to record. It's the last thing. And then when we're done, I'm like, all right, I feel much better. Like,
you're better.
Man.
You're better.
But I realized this year,
and I've been doing this, like the podcasting, since 2021. But I was doing other stuff, I think, going back all the way 2010, 2011. And I've always thought of myself as being like above it all, like just removed from the emotion of it. And I think I realized this season that during the off season, that's completely true. And I'm very good at taking my fan hat off and being like, yeah, no, this is objectively stupid. During the season, I'm a fan. Like, I want this team to win. I am going to be sad when they lose, and it's ongoing. I'm going to be really happy when they're winning. And that's sort of the way that it is. And
it's more fun to do what we do when they win. Like, regardless, like, even if you want to be objective and level headed and not have any rooting interest or whatever, like, you can't deny that being involved in this, what we do here, is more fun when the team wins. Like,
oh my God.
The beat writers would all tell you that.
Like, do you know how hard, and this can make me sound like I'm legitimately insane. It's hard for me to watch playoff baseball knowing that the Red Sox weren't even in it. It just makes me so angry, like seeing all these fans like, yay, my team. I'm like,
fuck you. Like, I it just made it enrages me. Like, I didn't watch any of that Yankees Cleveland game yesterday until like the 10th inning. I threw it on just because I can't. It just makes my
it's
anger.
Your fault. That's your fault then, man. You fucked us over, dude.
Dude, sucks.
You fucked us all over, Sammy.
My bad.
No, I do know what you mean, though. I'm actually kind of the opposite. I think that if the Red Sox were in it and then they got eliminated, I have had a harder time watching after that. Like, I know 2021, I didn't watch a single game of the World Series.
I actually think I agree with you, Ed. I don't know that I watched any of that World Series. I just, like, I'm so heartbroken after they're dead. But, like, in a year like this, it's like I went through that grieving process in early September.
Yeah, so you kind of got it. You kind of got it out of the way, which is good. I mean, I do think that because I was like such a big fan in like the 90s, like the late 90s, early 2000s, like I you can't hurt me any worse than 2003. You can't hurt me any worse than 2011. So it like makes it a little bit easier. 11, for them. Like, 11. I'm sure, you guys remember 2011.
Crawford should have caught it. He should have caught it.
There was a lot more. Like that was not a single play thing. That was a losing the entire goddamn month of September.
That month sucked.
I was waiting tables that month, and my tips went down based on the Red Sox performance. It was wild.
I'll tell you something about that night. And we unfortunately have to wrap, but what I will tell you about that night. So I was a freshman in high school at that time. I believe that was the first and only time I've cried about the outcome of a sporting event was on the last night of 2011. That happened. I was devastated.
Said the same thing. I think Hogdale did also. I cried because I know we're like over an hour now, but I did cry after the Aaron Boone home run off of Tim Wakefield.
That's
the only time I've ever cried myself to sleep.
that would have. I don't know if I would have been able to come back from that if I were old enough. I don't know. You too, because Sammy's like 100 years old. He remembers that very well. I don't know how you're still around, man.
I thought that was the year, Gordon. Yeah.
Sammy's like 5 years younger than me. What are we doing here?
Dude, I love having Ed on the show. It makes me feel so, yeah. I'm so young and spry, man. Look, I'm fighting weight. Let's go.
Ed, he's at least 15 years older than you. Don't pump his tires. He is at least 15 years older than you.
I skipped softball today because my wrist was sore. So that tells you what my age is.
Let's go. Let's go. I love that. Take that, Gordo.
Oh, God.
No, Sammy's a handsome young man, you know?
Yeah,
Sammy, I hope you're enjoying yourself, man. I hope you're having fun.
I'm going to shave my face before every episode now. This is great.
See what happens, man.
Yeah.
See what happens.
One more thing to say to you, Gordo, before this we're done here. Congratulations on the wedding. I got to see way more pictures of it than I thought I was going to because I used to work with your wife's mom, and she
sent that's true.
A bunch of people at work. So we all
is that right?
Yep. Liz was she was an intern for like the counseling program. That's my day job is with health services. So I know you're a very nice woman.
She's the best.
The wedding looked beautiful. You looked so happy. It was a great time. Really, really cool to say.
That was awesome. And I every time that the wedding comes up on Red Sox podcast or radio, I'm obligated to talk about Brad Foe hoisting me up in the chair, which is a thing happened. I'm very proud of him for doing it. But
Jewish weddings, man.
Yeah, Jewish weddings. And this is, as we talked about before we got on, potentially the most Jewish Red Sox podcast of all time. 100%. Jewish right here. It may have never happened.
We want Max Fried. That's the real reason.
Wait, is Alex Bregman Jewish?
Yes, he is.
Fried? Yeah.
Alex Bregman is Jewish, and so is Max Fried. They are both Jewish.
Okay, so yeah, the Red Sox have the chance to do the funniest thing ever. But
sponsored by
gefilte fish.
It would have to be like a stomach problem medication or something.
Oh, God,
my stomach hurts. Oh.
Oh, God. Ed, we appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for jumping on with us.
Anytime. Glad to finally get to do this. I mean, you guys do a good job. You really do.
Appreciate it, man. You do as well.
Just keep going.
Yeah, he's at EdHand89 on Twitter. You're probably already following him, but if you're not, you should be. Pod by the river, to the show we go. He is the best, And we are excited for the free agency rankings to drop soon for you, man. We appreciate you coming on. Remember, like, rate, subscribe, all that stuff. Till next time, play Tessie, man. Episode 142. Thanks for tuning in. Peace.